But like I said, we've got a short show today, so let's get to it. After failing to understand my own notes or time yesterday, we've reached that point today where we do, in fact, get our view from the north. Yeah, he's getting it done. NBC Sports North, blah, blah, blah. NBC Sports Northwest. Maybe I do need a nap. Online, NBCSports.com/Northwest. Channel 737 on your Xfinity system. On Twitter, roll out the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how you doing on this Friday?
I'm doing pretty well, man. How are you?
Good. Now, I'm not going to sing, but I will wish you a happy belated birthday. So, happy birthday to you, Mr. Fentress.
You're not going to sing, really?
Hey, we're friends. I want to keep it like that. So, we're going to go down this path of... So, how old are you, Mr. Aaron J. Fentress?
Let's see. I'm a little bit younger than you.
That's not saying much.
And I'm a little bit older than Rob Mosley.
All right, so that should put you at about 46?
I can't say, man.
All right. Hey,
I'm older than 46.
Okay, well, you look good for whatever the hell you are.
I'm the big 51.
Okay. By the way, I think we've had this conversation before. Where actually were you born and where you grew up, you know, early days, Fentress?
I was born in Chicago. And then my parents, this is a long story, my parents moved to the Bay Area when I was 5. They split up, and then my mom moved to Arizona, and my dad moved to Portland, and I went back and forth. Like, literally, like, half of fifth grade in Arizona, half in Portland. 6th grade in Arizona, 7th grade in Portland, 8th grade in Arizona, 9th grade in Arizona, and I said, screw this, I'm not going to graduate from a small little town in the middle of nowhere in Arizona, and I finished high school in Portland.
Okay, there it is.
Insane.
That's going to be one fun segment of the autobiography of Aaron Fentress.
Exactly.
So while I know you're fine-tuning your game in hopes of joining the Champions Tour, based on the photo you put up on your Twitter profile, I'm guessing you took in the final round of the Masters on Sunday?
Oh, yeah, of course. That was huge, man. I always believed he would come. I always believed if he got healthy, he would win again. I never understood people who thought, "Oh, he's done." Now, if you were saying health wise, you didn't believe he could do it, that his body would fall apart again, then that's, you know, that's okay. But if he got healthy and still couldn't win, I'm like, are you forgetting who we're talking about? Oh, he's old. He's not 70. He's like 42 when he came back or whatever. 43. It's like, that's not old. People older than him have won, and the people who did that were nowhere near as good as he was in his prime. He was a witch doctor. Did he win like 14 majors in 10 years or 11 years or something like that?
From 97 to 2008, he won his 14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just stupid. No one's come close to that. Jack Nicklaus won 18 in 26 years or 22 years,
yeah,
something like that.
I from 62 to 86, but he won 15 from 62 to 78. I mean, you know, 6-1, half a dozen the other. Both ridiculous.
Right, so those two are obviously, like, they, in their prime, they were the two most dominant ever. But there was just no doubt in my mind he was definitely going to win again. Now, the major thing, that's a little tougher, but I figured, I think I said last year, my prediction was, if he's healthy for another 4 years, that's 16 shots, he's winning one. There's just no way he wasn't going to, and he did it. And I think if he stays healthy, he's going to have a chance to win some more, because he's just that great, period.
Well, also, first of all, he's like Jack outside his prime. Guys like Freddie Couples, for some reason, their game is tailored to Augusta National. So
I
always thought that if he got healthy, if he struggled to win Opens or the PGA,
that
Augusta National is his place.
Well, how he played was it the par 3 12 or par 6, was it par 3 12 or 16? Which one is the one?
They're both par 3s.
The
8 iron on 16 where
that's
he hit
one,
it and sloped and it looked like, oh my God, he's going to ace it.
Right, and wasn't it the one that Finau and... the other guy screwed up?
Well, that was 12. That's when they hit into the creek.
Okay, yeah, that's right, that's right. But it was he clearly felt comfortable knowing what to do and what not to do.
Right.
On that course, you know what I mean? Like, okay, I've been here so many times, I've done this so many times, I'm going to use my savvy instead of trying to, you know, be the tiger who's, you know, always making magical shots. He just played it so smartly and let people fall apart around him, and then he got hot himself. So it was awesome to see, and I think we'll see more. I definitely think he's back as long as he stays healthy. But that's the thing with, you know, when you have your fusions done to your back, it's like you never know when something else might pop. But if he stays healthy, he's going to win more.
Well, and also, you know, I'm a golf junkie, but now the PGA next month is at Bethpage Black, where he won a major in 2002. The U.S. Open is Pebble Beach, where he won a U.S. Open. So he's got two of his favorite courses coming up. And by the way, I think you'll agree with this. The buildup to those two is going to be nuts.
Oh, it's going to be crazy. Because, yeah, just having him back as, because before, when he won the, oh my God, I'm so bad with this. You're a long time. He won the Players, right, last year?
No, it wasn't a Players Championship, but it was a regular PGA Tour event, which he hadn't won since 2015.
Right, but it was the one that closed out the series of four.
Yeah, it's, you know, they play the, they have the World Golf Championships and stuff like that. Like I said, it was a substantial one. It wasn't, you know, sometimes they have these tournaments in November and December and they're PGA events, but it's like the field is eh.
Right, exactly. So winning that one showed, okay, he's definitely back. He can win. Now that he's won a major, when you go into majors from now on, it's like, well, he's done it already. Why can't he do it again? And so that just adds juice to fire. I mean, imagine, like, you know, when Kobe and LeBron and Shaq and Duncan, those guys were running around, and then Jordan came back and won a title and was still Jordan. How exciting that would be. I mean, it's kind of a weird analogy, but you get my point. It's like, basically, Michael Jordan of golf came back and is still a threat. And these young guys who are, some of them are young enough to be his child and might even be given his past, are threats.
Well, also considering what we found out Tiger was doing during his career, they literally could be his kids. We continue with Aaron Fentress of NBC Sports Northwest. So last week you teased that...
you're coming in. Hold on one second. Sorry about that. You ready?
That's right. What are you getting, gas or something? Are you letting somebody in the house? Playing cards? What's going on with you?
My bad. My bad. Sorry. Go ahead. I got disrupted. My bad.
That's all right. So last week, you teased me and our listeners that it might be logical and historically beneficial if the Seahawks did not sign Russell Wilson. Obviously, they did not. But, you know, looking back, how realistic was it that they were actually going to consider trading him as opposed to what they did, make him the franchise?
I never thought that was going to happen. I mean, I think there's an argument to be made for letting go of a quarterback over 30. You're going to pay $35 million a year because of what that does to your salary cap, and that the last 20 years, the younger quarterbacks are winning it, making less money most of the time, unless it's Tom Brady. So I think there's that legitimate argument that you could say, you know what, if they were able to get a legitimate young quarterback in, and we've seen a lot of teams pull off some good draft picks lately in the last just 2 or 3 years, it would actually make sense. I mean, on the surface right now, I would honestly say if you said tomorrow you could trade Russell Wilson for Dak Prescott, and if Dak were only making $3 or $4 million a year, would you be a better team? And you could take that other $30 million and buy and do something else with it. I think you can make that argument. You could. Now, Dak's about to get paid a big contract, and so is Goff. So eventually those guys get paid. But at the end of the day, how are you going to build a championship team around this guy if you're giving him $35 million? And then you look at you're still eating for another two years, you're eating Cam Chancellor's money, which is about like 12. That's 47. If you were to try and keep Frank Clark, who's going to make at least 18, he's going to make 17 this year on the franchise tag. If you paid him 18 a year, now you're looking at 65 tied up in three guys and one's not even playing. So at some point, you're like, you got a starting DB making $400,000. You got a right guard making those things add up, and then a team can figure out ways to beat you despite your great quarterback, which is what we've seen happen to other star players in the last, 10 to 15 years, because you're paying one guy too much money and the rest of the team just isn't up to par, unless you're Tom Brady, who we all know has given back money to the team to help build a team around him. So it's tough, but I still never thought it was going to happen, because at the end of the day, if you give away a future Hall of Fame quarterback, one, it's unprecedented, and two, you're going to feel the wrath of the fans.
Sure. You start doling out that money, though, to be the first NFL franchise to have an hourly employees playing like outside linebacker. Anyway, I wanted to bring up something in general, because I am always floored. So here we are in April. It was a couple days after this magical Masters. You've got that night, you had a full slate. It was Wednesday. Every Major League Baseball team in action. 3 NBA playoff games. 3 NHL playoff games. The NFL releases its schedule, and the world stops. I mean, are you ever as amazed as I am, as much as we love a bunch of other sports? Man, in this country, the NFL is just the boss, and it ain't even close.
It's crazy, and I had to write a Seahawks schedule story article post, and I just went ahead just for the fun of it and gave a prediction for each game, and I even put in there, way too early, don't hold me to it, it's just for fun, entertainment purposes, or whatever, predictions. I think it had them end up being 10-6. I haven't even looked at the Chicago Bears schedule yet. I mean, that's how much I do not care about NFL schedules in April. And we all know that once the schedule starts, what we think about it in April, May, and June is going to be turned upside down come September, October, November, because the cast of characters change, the teams change in terms of who's good, who's bad. So getting all geeked up about it and looking at now who's got the toughest schedule, it's absolutely mindless. I mean this in a nice way, it's mindless chatter. There's no way any conversation being had right now about anyone's schedule is going to matter come September, because we all know things are going to happen that are going to make certain teams better than we thought and certain teams worse than we thought, right?
Of course.
Like, who knew Pat Mahomes was going to throw 50 touchdowns? So any analysis you made about their schedule in April was thrown out the window, or anyone who played them was thrown out the window when all of a sudden, oh my God, this guy's throwing 5 touchdowns a quarter. So just little things like that. So even talk about it now to me is an absolute waste of breath.
Well, it's hysterical because you don't even know the lineup. I mean, rosters turnover. There's free agents. There's injuries. There's drafts. So you could be making a prediction based on a starting 22 that might change between now and then by 30%, 35%. It's hysterical. All right. So speaking of critical games, the spring game tomorrow, down here at Autzen. I know you had a chance to talk with Cristobal, and just in the last 10 years, I mean, you've been working closely with Bilotti and Chip and Health and Taggart, and now Cristobal. I don't know, from his attack style recruiting, his willingness to embrace big expectations. When you talk with him, what are some of the things that pop about him as Duck coach?
Mario, to me, there's zero reason, I think, to believe, not zero, but there's very few reasons to believe he's not going to be successful. And there's also some reasons to believe he's not going to be successful. Like, to me, he's just right on the fence. Like, he could go either way. We don't have a track record on him, right?
Right.
He was at a lower level school, and he rebuilt that program with no weight room. That was awesome. And then things went downhill and he got fired. What does that mean? We don't know, right? He's coached 1 year with other people's recruits and an elite quarterback, and they had a good season, but it was a good season with a really bad schedule, and the offense and the running game were kind of like, what was that? So, but he was recruiting his butt off. He's obviously smart. He's obviously a hard worker, determined, tough. He's got that great background of having played at Miami, won national titles, having being an offensive line coach at Alabama under Saban. Like, there's so much there to say, wow, this guy could be amazing. And then there's things there to go, well, we just don't know. It's a big, giant mystery, and it's kind of fun to watch how it's going to unfold. I that the floor is that it's going to be good, right?
Right.
There's no – I don't think there's any way the Ducks are have a losing season at some point, but they're not going to roll off 3 or 4 straight losing seasons. But at the same time, I can't see her and they're going to win the national title. I just, I can't say that, even though they had a good recruiting class. that's what strikes me with me, is this is a pretty watch to see where this goes, because there's so much on there.
The last thing I want to ask, and I know everybody's talking about him, but first of all, you get physical specimens that come here as freshmen. I think back to Jonathan Stewart or Haloti Ngata, but you really, the media didn't really have any access. But this young man, Kayvon Thibodeau, comes in here, and it's like he's a fifth-year senior, and the program is centered on him. I mean, from the type of player he might be to just his demeanor and the way this kid carries himself, I mean, how just out of their minds should fans be to see what he actually does on the field?
Yeah, it's fun to watch, you know, and I never hold it against young kids when they appear, I'm not saying you are, but when they appear shy or unsure, because it's tough. You know, you go from Austin, you know, people, you know, all these questions, all these media members wondering about you, or there's all the pressure on you and stuff like that. So when a kid acts like a kid, I forgive kid. Like, it was like Dennis Dixon. Like, Dennis was so uncomfortable in front of the media. It was clear. And I remember some people saying, I'll never forget it. Some reporter said, he's just not smart. And I got so pissed. I'm like, is he a 4.0 student? Which he was, right?
Right.
Like, so is he not smart, or is he just nervous talking? He didn't know who the hell you are. Like, and so I let kids be kids. And then sometimes there's guys who just, they're just natural. Like, they're just natural of other people, natural talking about themselves. They're comfortable in their skin. And, you know, it's fun to see, and it's cool to see. And he's one of those guys. Like, he just is. And it's kind of cool to see. And when I was talking to Ellis about him and Crystal Ball about him, when I interviewed two guys, they were both like, it's, I believe he's 18. Well, I guess, how is this guy just 18 from the next? And you look at him physically, and so you just know that combination of maturity and assuredness along with talent is going to lead to success. Like, there's just almost no doubt.
Well, I can't wait to check him out tomorrow, see him live action, even if it is a practice. But, folks,
right.
He...
Listen to this, though. He's gonna put a move on an offensive tackle and have a straight line at the quarterback and can't touch him.
Right. Yeah.
It would be like if he went to a scrimmage and we go see T.J. Walker coming in. He jukes up across him, goes down the lane and can't dunk it.
Yeah, well, first of all, somebody...
It's such a letdown from that point.
Well, somebody better remind him, red means no. when they play
red meat, stop.
All right, folks. Aaron Fentress of NBC Sports Northwest, online at Aaron J. Fentress. Always fun talking, my friend. Have a great weekend. We'll catch up soon.
Man.
Take it easy.
All right, take care.